You want a podcast? Great. They have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
You're listening to Vandaltron's Curious World Podcast. Check it out, baby.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I saw this post. It might have been Instagram or Twitter or whatever. You know, it was a workout thing, and it said, you know, train like an animal or something, and because there is no tomorrow. And I remember that from Rocky III, you know, when Apollo is running with Rocky, and he's like, there is no tomorrow. And certainly as a meme, as a workout meme, that is, I get it, you know, like, bust your ass, like, don't put this off, like, I get it. But the thing is, tomorrow, there is a tomorrow. Tomorrow does come. And I think we all kind of know that. I think, you know, we all work well with deadlines because deadlines are real. So we try to create these artificial deadlines for ourselves as a target of like, okay, I got to do this. I got to do this by 3 o'clock. I got to get my shit together. But the consequences are what motivate us. Now, you can say, well, if I don't do it, then this will happen or that will happen. Or if it's a work thing, then obviously it affects my work. I guess, you know, that's where discipline comes in. And I'm not just talking about working out. You know, I mean, our concepts of time require discipline. You know, a concept that I've been thinking a lot about is time. How we kind of view time as linear. You know, the past is something that we recollect, and obviously, you know, and the present is this moment right now, and the future is ahead of us. But that's just a concept. You know, I mean, the only thing that we can really point to is the sun comes up and the sun comes down. You know, the hours and the date and the year, that's all stuff we created. Sometimes I think about, and I'm fucking no scientist, I'm not smart at all, but I think about, you know, all these, you know, the multiverse and how there's this theory of, you know, there's a simultaneous version of you and an infinite amount of like you, like I'm talking and there's different versions of me talking and there's different versions of you listening to me talking. I don't know about all that. That's out there. But I have been thinking about the idea of time and what it does to us from a psychological and emotional perspective. We get so caught up in time. You know, I think a lot of times when you lie in bed at night or, you know, on your way to work, you think about your brain goes forwards and backwards. You know, the past gives you depression and the future gives you anxiety. You know, I read about this a lot about, you know, people that are suffer from depression or suffer from anxiety and potentially need to be medicated or suicidal. Our brain can be a maze and sometimes a prison. But getting back to the, you know, there is no tomorrow and the discipline, all too often we say we're going to do something. We say we're going to be better versions of ourselves. And then when the time comes, we slip back into patterns and then we don't do it. I don't know why. I mean, is it just because we're just creatures? We're just creatures of habit? Or is it because our concept of time? Like, oh, well, I'll get another chance to do it. You know, time and time again, you hear about people wishing for that one more moment they've had with a loved one. And I think about that. You know, every time that I go home, I think about, I'm going to be a better version of myself. But then I kind of slip into these patterns. Not that I'm a dick. But I'm not who I want to be, and sometimes it kills me. sometimes I want to say certain words and they don't come out because I'm kind of, I feel like I'm in this emotional magnet and I can't break free. And I, because if I do, it just feels weird and artificial. Maybe it's time. Maybe I know I'm going to die. You know you're going to die. But do we really live life to the fullest? No. And I don't understand. I mean, on one side, I feel like, yeah, live your life, like, go nuts, carpe diem, you know, eat ice cream when you want to eat ice cream, and live a vagabond life and go hiking and skydiving or whatever. But on the other hand, I feel like there's a practicality to life, and you know, there's a methodology to this marathon, and there's sustainability. Because, for instance, like, we all joke, I think, about, like, oh my God, you know, I wish if I had, you know, $1 billion, I'd be, you know, sipping margaritas. I almost said pina coladas, but I had pina coladas over the weekend, and I'm actually still nauseous just thinking about it. I'm never going to drink a pina colada again. Mark my words. Ugh. It's like drinking sweet paste with alcohol. Anyway, sipping margaritas poolside and like somebody feeding you grapes. And I think that would be good for like a weekend, maybe even less. But you can't live your life like that. You know, you get bored. So what is it? You know, I think a lot of times on this show we explore meaning and purpose and value to your life and, you know, the pathway that where you're going. And it's not easy. It's not easy determining that. It's not easy putting in the work. Is it just managing time? Is it just negotiating these moments from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, and because they add up. We're always, I don't know, like the be here now, I don't know if that's really logical. I get it. Emotionally, I get it. You should be here now and you should be honest and truthful to yourself emotionally and tell people kind things around you that are meant to be heard. But I feel like the things that you do now are kind of like down payments toward the future. I don't know. Maybe this, none of this makes sense. But it is things that I'm kind of wrestling with, of maybe life isn't that linear line, that horizontal line, or that vertical line. You know, I think a lot of times we think about, I'm going to achieve our goal, I'm going to climb that mountain, great. And I've always thought that the danger in getting that is, you know, all that emotional attachment to that goal. And when you get it, then what? I think the antithesis of that is settling and not really striving for that, and not getting that secondary goal either, and just feeling like a disappointment. I think that's the trap of time, is that we sometimes do get into these molds, these modules of quicksand of time, where it's like, I can't, I think certain pain just lasts forever. I don't mean like emotional, I mean physical pain. I mean like trauma. And you know, trauma can mean whatever it is. Somebody breaks your heart or you lose a loved one. That shit can just feel like forever. And then sometimes things just, they don't last long enough. I feel like we invest too much in our feelings. You know, if you're sick, you just feel like shit. if you're looking good, you had a good hair day, and the suit fits you well, then you feel good about yourself. But we're not our feelings, you know? We're not. If you sprain your ankle, doesn't mean you're a bad person. You may feel like shit. You have food poisoning. I think we are our thoughts. And so, what do we think about time? You know, what do we think about our existence? I know this is like really probably like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? I know, I get it. I know. I'm just sharing this stuff with you. Probably one of the lamest intros ever. But I don't know. Like, this is something I've just kind of just been wondering about. Like, our concepts of time, how we all kind of are on this train. And can we get off? Are we energy? If we're energy, then we should be able to go forwards and backwards anytime we want. I don't know. You know, I had somebody write to me and say, like, he wanted to, like, meet me and fight me. That's kind of weird, right? I start thinking, like, what provoked this? I don't know. It's just a listener, somebody on Twitter just said, like, basically challenged me to a duel. And I thought, are you fucking out of your mind? I'm an adult. I'm not going to fight you, stupid. Yeah, but there's a little part of me that like, man, I'll kick your ass. But there's another part of me, it's like, you have absolutely nothing else going on that you want to reach out to me and challenge me? Jesus. I don't know, man. Time. What's it all about? So this all came about tying it into my guest today. I ran into him in New York, as you do in any kind of major city. You kind of run into people that you knew or just kind of in happenstance. My friend Josh, who I know a lot of actors who are named Josh. Maybe that's a thing. But Josh is a working actor, and you know, I remember just having a lot of good times with him, a lot of the struggle. I think it's fair to say that he and I are in different places in our lives, but the core of who we are and why we connected and why we became friends, it's still there. So it doesn't matter what we do for a living or how we see the world. I actually like that we see the world a little differently, or what we hold important to be different. That's how we learn from each other. So I enjoyed this conversation. We get into acting and the pursuit of art. So hope you enjoy it. And yeah, let's just sit back and enjoy not only the time but the space. Thank you for listening. And here you go, my Curious World podcast conversation with my friend. My good friend, Josh Taylor.
Oh, gee, this is going to be kind of weird.
I know, really. You're going to be like...
I'm fine. What's going on?
I know. It's actually... It kind of makes me a little paranoid, I think.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like, actually. I like when I get paranoid. It's kind of a new high, you know?
Paranoia?
Yeah. You get high off the paranoia. I hate to say it, but I've been... I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I've been... The last 3 weeks, I've been getting high at work. Never done that in my life.
What's wrong with that? Like, how high?
No, I'd have a quick little hit and then go off to work. And then
like buzzed, right?
Yeah. But I, for me, it's still considered, like, wrong. Like, oh, you're under the influence by going to work, you know? But...
Whoa, you mean you consider it wrong from your own moral standards?
Yeah.
Or if you get caught?
No. Yeah, if I get caught. It feels wrong because of societal standards. For me, morally, I don't think it's wrong.
People you work with know?
Some do, yeah.
Yeah. Are they down? Or are they?
Yeah. They laugh. They're like, they're like, oh yeah, yeah. I don't know if everybody knows. I'm sure by the abrupt change in personality, I'm sure, like, some of them were like, Josh is a little strange today. And one girl said, when I came in, she said, hey, Josh, what's up? I said, your eyes look different. And I go, really? Like hangover different? She says, yeah. So then I was trying to indicate, oh, yeah, I went out drinking last night or something, you know. So hoping that she would know. But
He parties hard. But it mellows you out. It's, you know.
It totally mellows.
It's not like, man. You know, I've actually worked with people who are drunks who come in and they're like, got the bulbous red nose and they're sweating. And it's just, that's sad.
That is, yeah. I don't see how people can do that. Because you're just, you're totally, what's the word? You're just not focused.
Well, your body's falling apart.
Yeah. And you're sweaty and you're not, at least when I'm drunk, you're not relatable. You can't talk. With getting weed, you're more relatable, I think. You're more down to earth. You're recording this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, well, you're kind of become, that's what's a little scary about it, because the paranoia does kind of set in a little bit, and I'm like, am I going to get in trouble? All these, like, questions. But I realize that's, like, totally just my ego. Like, no one cares. Unless you're making a fool out of yourself, you know. Or your work suffers.
That's the thing. In moderation, right? Anything in moderation. I think if, like, most people, if let's say you drank a beer, I mean, everything in moderation, I think you'd be okay.
Yeah.
It's just that certain people go overboard on certain things. It could be anything. You could eat like a bunch of food and have to go to work and have to take massive shits. That would be unprofessional.
Or even, well, yeah, anything. There's people who exercise too much, I think.
Do you think that's an addiction?
Yeah. Well, depends on where I think actually it depends more on where you're coming from. If your addiction is to look good, then yeah, it's an addiction.
I saw this documentary on bodybuilders, and that is, I mean, they're all addicts. It's all personality based.
Yeah.
Like these guys.
Yeah.
This one guy said he works out 8 hours a day. That's ridiculous. I don't do anything for 8 hours.
You think it's ridiculous? I don't know. I wouldn't say it.
Oh, it's definitely... No, people can do whatever they want. They're not hurting anybody. Right. I'm just saying that it's clearly an addiction.
It's, I don't know. It's just like where they feel comfortable. I used to play... You know, I was a classical musician back in the day before I was an actor. And I played tuba. I was a concert tuba player, if you can believe that. Did I tell you that? Did you?
Yeah, yeah. This is all coming back to me. Okay. But I can't... I thought you were supposed to be like 300 pounds.
I know, really. No. You'd be surprised. You know, whenever you see a movie about a certain culture or a certain profession, like the wrestler comes to mind. And you see the behind the scenes of what's going on and how people really take it seriously and just sides of the industry. You just think it's kind of a clown show when you watch wrestling on television. But you see how seriously people take it. Same thing in the tuba world. You'd be just so surprised how seriously people take it. And just like acting, it's so competitive. And I was practicing 4 to 5 hours a day, just playing tuba.
High school?
The latter part of high school, all through college.
Wow.
I got a scholarship for it. And, I got so caught up in the competition of it too, because you just want to be the best, you know. Uh-huh. And it's your survival, and you know you're taught if you take one day off, you set yourself back 2 weeks. Like that was taught.
What drew you to that particular instrument?
I started in high school. I actually am a latecomer when it comes to music. Like I didn't start formal training until high school and all that sort of stuff because we just happened to have a beginner band, and it was an elective. So I got in there, and at first I wanted to be you could choose your instrument, and at first I wanted to be a drummer. Then I went to the trumpet, and then the teacher says, one day I walk into his office, and he has you know, this big old tuba sitting there, and I was just like, wow, what is that? It just has this...
It's like something from, like, Neptune's chamber.
Yeah, man. It's like this big, amazing instrument-looking thing, and I go, what's that? And he looks at what I'm looking at, and then he looks at me and says, that's a tuba. You want to play that? And he was immediately interested, because no one plays... Who wants to play the fucking tuba, yeah? And he was like... He immediately saw it in my eyes, like, wow, he's interested in this. And I said, well, I'd like to try it out. So it was kind of an instrument he had to assemble together. And it was old and dirty and whatever. And I blew on it, and it kind of felt kind of cool to blow this low note out of this big old instrument, you know? And then he said, if you take that instrument, I guarantee you an automatic A. He started, like, making a contract with me how my high school career is going to go. He goes, I'll give you an automatic A for this class. I can guarantee you next year you'll be in the concert band. And then that following time, as a sophomore, you will be in, the symphonic band, which is the highest band. He says, most people don't make it till junior year. I can guarantee you. I know you're talented enough. You will. And I was like, all right.
He sounds like a pimp.
But he knew he needed a tuba player, and I didn't realize this, but he was just trying to get me to stick with the tuba, because it's hard to find a tuba
player. Yeah, he has his own...
He had an agenda going on. But, man, I started playing it, and then it was like the first time ever really being formally introduced to the world of the performing arts. Like, the world.
But when you started playing it, how did you react? Did you like, oh, I'm going to have take some getting used to this, or you're like, was it like a lightning bolt moment?
It was, I would say it falls on more on the lightning bolt side, because I just knew I think the other reason I chose it was because it was going to get me a lot of attention. There's this big ass instrument that people are going to be like, what the hell did you just pick? I said, this is the tuba, man. Like, everyone was picking saxophone and trumpet and, you know, all the cool instruments, which of course I wish I was playing right now. But I was like, no, I'm gonna be different. I'm gonna choose this huge instrument, and it got me attention, and it was bigger than me at the time. I was only like 4'10" freshman year in high school, and here's this instrument that I would hurl on top of my back, and the band hall to my car was clear across the campus. So I would take this big old instrument, put it on my shoulder, and walk clear across the campus. Like,
don't they have, but traditionally, aren't they?
There's a car, yeah. But our school was too cheap, and we didn't have that. But
you know, like other instruments, like, you know, oh, I want to sound like Jimi Hendrix, or I want to sound like, you know, John Coltrane. But you didn't have that, right? You were just like, this feels good, I'm just going to keep doing it?
No. In the beginning, no. Then I think about it, you're absolutely right. There was no... That's interesting you bring that up, actually, because there was no one to look up. There's no role model. You could be like, yeah, I want to do that. I think that's another attractive quality about that instrument, is that there were no standards to live by. Right. So you can kind of invent your own self as
a tuba player. Did you have like a, like somebody else who you could kind of compare notes with in the band?
No.
It was just you.
I have to admit, there was one kid who came, I think my senior year, who played the tuba, and there was kind of a threat. It's like, uh-oh, here's this new tuba player. But I didn't lose my... And I didn't really get to know him. I knew of him, and we talked and all that. But no, there wasn't someone to be like...
Fuck you, you're my understudy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, fuck you, man. Don't try to come in on my territory. But yeah, dude, I just played that. And so, as I was getting better and more interested and just attracted by the world of the performing arts, which, you know... Choosing tuba eventually led me to be an actor. I really believe that, you know, that's all connected. And I was studying with, I started studying with the principal tubist of the San Francisco Ballet and the San Francisco Symphony. I was living in San Francisco. And they were the first people to tell me, this guy, I'll never forget, Peter Warhoff, dude. He's principal tubist of San Francisco Ballet. I remember one day he said, "Express yourself." At a lesson, I was taking private lessons, and he said, "Just express yourself."
Just... Is that when you whip out your dick and start running around?
Oh, that'd be weird. No, but it was a interesting moment. It was for me. No one's ever really told me to do that through another medium. That was like a light. I was like, wow. And I went home and practiced for like, I couldn't stop practicing because I didn't, this concept of expressing myself just never really, I was just playing to play. I was just trying to be good. You're on this technique and one day, wow. It's like, holy shit.
Where does somebody practice the tuba and doesn't feel the wrath of family and neighbors?
Dude, have you ever listened to like a solo tubist?
It's loud, right?
No. It's very soothing.
Really?
Very soothing sound. It's not like a lot of people, I think, stereotypically go boom, 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 like something. I wish I had my tuba here. It's in my storage. But it's a very... I mean, it has a very soothing, calming sound. And so when people hear it, it's not jarring at all. It's very warm. Like, think of a cello. Just right, a nice right. cello. Yeah.
And so you... Well, outside of school, how did you transport the tuba?
What do you mean?
Cool. You said that you were kind of lugging it to your car. If you had to go out and do like performances and stuff, you just muscle up and just kind of move around?
Well, you put it in the car, of course, and you drive to your place and you pull it out. It was a pain in the ass, man. It was eventually the reason why I left. I think I hated carrying this big old instrument.
How'd your family react to you wanting to play that?
Well, they never said don't do it.
That's a good endorsement.
they never were like, are you sure you want to? And in that act alone, they were supportive. I do think, you know, your parents kind of know you better than yourself. And I think they knew, to some weird extent, that it was kind of a phase, in a way. Even though I'm serious about music and I still love to sing and, you know, I'm always playing something. But I think they were just like, well, but they knew, I think as parents... You know, one of the things they knew is like, you know, let this guy figure it out. If he wants to be a tuba player, let him be a tuba player, man. Who knows? You know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I wish more parents had that attitude. I mean, a lot of parents they try to put their kids on a track.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And they, you know, they enforced schoolwork and stuff like that. And they were much more of academia. They much more wanted me to be good at that stuff. Whereas music was looked at as like an extracurricular activity.
Right.
Same with acting. It was always considered something you did on the more on the side, not something you totally immersed yourself in, you know.
But so how did you flip the switch from music to acting?
Well, keep in mind I was always exposed to the theater growing up. We had a friend in the family who produced a lot of community theater, and so we went to those productions all the time. And then my dad always took us to the theater, like the high school productions, not the main super expensive, you know, go to the city, but he always took us to the high school productions. And
what compelled him to do that?
Did
you know anybody in there? It's unique for parents to take the
really?
Family to a local theater.
No. It was, when I say it was the high school, okay, I didn't tell you what my dad is. My dad taught at a high school, and he would bring us to the high school theatrical productions.
He teach in the arts?
No, he taught, well, in a way, he taught English. English and typing. This is back when he actually took typing class. No one does that anymore, I don't think.
Because we're all typing on our thumbs.
I know,
thumbs.
It's a whole new world. It's crazy. But yeah, he was,
So he would take you guys to support the school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Support the school and support our friend who also produced community theater. And so I was exposed to a fair amount, you know. I was looking at it and enjoying it. And there was never this, I don't know, I can honestly say back then it was just something, it was still considered something I just went to. It's not something I necessarily, I mean, I did participate in school, but it was, yeah, like I said, just a fun thing to do. It wasn't never taken seriously or even inspired where I was like, I gotta be up there. And that happened later for some reason. It didn't happen when I was a kid. I just naturally did it like you would naturally go out and play baseball or something.
Right. And do you remember any of the shows that you saw when you were a kid that you were like, wow, this is really nice? Or were they like, were they revivals or were they original works that like the students wrote or?
What? Man. My earliest things were those children's theater tours that would come into your school.
Oh, right.
And, you know, do a production of some sort. And I was always like, who are those people?
Me too. I'd be like, what kind of life do they go after this?
And not only that, there would sometimes, would you see kids in the shows too?
I don't remember.
Like little child gypsies. And I thought, who are those people, man? I want to be those people. You know, I thought that was always kind of cool.
I had a situation where we were at the park, and they had like something like that. We had a bunch of kids and people just, it's like, and they were recruiting people to come see the performance. So I said, well, I'd love to be part of the performance.
Oh, and really?
Huh?
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so, and I was just kidding. And they were like, okay, well, we may have some lines for you. I went, great. I actually didn't know what they were doing. I just knew that they were going to be upstage, and I was like, okay. And so they told me these lines. You think you can memorize it? And I went, yeah, no problem. And so, you know, so everybody said, who is at the park? We all come in and kind of take our seats at the little, kind of like, you know, there's like benches and there's like a makeshift stage out there.
Uh-huh.
And my part was like, I was like, just kind of like a forest child of like two or three other forest children.
Right.
And it's not like Eugene O'Neill. I mean, this play was like maybe 20 minutes.
Okay.
And so I know my part, that I'm supposed to come in and say a few lines and stuff like that. And then, and so I got along and everything was great. Right. And then, and there's like, hey, you know, we really like working with you. Do you want to come with us? I'm like, come with you where? I'm like, well, we do this at different parks and, you know, outside of museums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, but I live here. It's like, well, like, how? What about school and everything? Oh yeah, don't worry about that. And it was just so. I mean, looking back, wow. They were probably a cult, but because they were so nice. But
Oh, you didn't join? You didn't?
No, I didn't do it. And I would have to live with them.
Oh, wow. Oh, shit.
They're like a traveling theater group.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they were like hippies. But yeah, it was just so weird. Like, what if... Well, I would never do it.
That was a really hippie thing to do back in the day. I bet.
To travel and put up performances.
Yeah, in little schools. That was... I mean, now it's like a full-blown business. You know, people have professional children's storm. But I'm sure there are those... Maybe when it was more of a novelty, it was like, hey, let's just travel around.
In the West Coast, you probably had more of that, right?
Yeah. But I wanted to get back to what you were saying, what you were doing. What's interesting, though, is that you were drawn to it.
Oh, well, I wanted to be, I guess, you know, I guess we were, you know, before we turn on the mics, we were talking about, actually, I think when we were still on, we were talking about addiction and, I believe that addiction is really a part of your personality. Okay. So either some people are more prone to being addicted and some people aren't.
Okay.
And I feel that we have our different personality traits in us. Some of us want to be performers and some of us want to be more analytical. I think that was just part of that. I liked it. I was never shy in front of people like that. I mean, when I was a kid in front of parties, like, mm-hmm. you know, my parents would have parties, I would be shy.
Yeah.
Because it was me. I didn't have to anything. I didn't have, like, a mask to hide behind, where I was anonymous in front of these people at a park or, mm-hmm. what, you know, if I was, like, the big bad wolf in, like, production of my elementary school's Three Little Pigs, I could hide behind a mask. And I liked it. In fact, I gravitated to it. Mm. But in personal situations, I was always nervous.
Yeah, but it's... I think I was going to go into some, like, transcendental place. I was like, but it's cool that... Like, another person would not be... It's just interesting how you naturally just went that way. Like, you like you're whatever inside you just went, ooh, you guys perform, and, like, well, like there was no... Whereas someone else, you know, you introduce them to that world, and they're like... No, but they naturally go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with household, upbringing.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched a lot of TV when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really into, like, make-believe and creating my own stories and things like that. And I guess, you know, some people are kind of raised, you know, very analytical or, you know, don't talk to strangers, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think things like that need to be some sort of, like, a lot of ingredients need to be put into play.
Well, it's also an itch. I don't know how true this is, but I can definitely see it as, at the end of the day, you just want to be loved.
Of course.
And, you know, am I, like, striving for that? Am I, you know, I didn't get enough love growing up, or, you know, wasn't shown enough or something like that, and you're like, you're every person you meet, whatever, you're just like, hey, love me, love me. You know, you're constantly saying that. You know, almost subliminally, you know. You're just...
Well, I think performers, that's kind of etched in us.
Yeah.
But what we do is we want to receive that love on our terms.
Mm.
And some people want that, like, literally. Like, they want, like, people to say, I admire you. You're great.
Yeah.
Totally. And that's, like, an emotional thing. And that could translate to if you're a stockbroker or a singer or firefighter, whatever you do.
Right.
But I think maybe performing by definition is you're seeking approval.
Mm.
You know, people, you don't do something so people say, yeah, I saw you in King Lear, man. You were really fucking shitty. Oh, well, you know what? I'm just doing my thing. Nobody does that.
Right,
I mean,
you
want approval, but you want that approval on your terms, you know, based on your work. Yeah, but definitely it speaks to an emotional emotional want. Sometimes it's healthy and sometimes it's unhealthy. And sometimes I think people get into, you know, the world of acting or performing only for that, you know, only for that praise. I think it's there to some degree by nature, but also too, I mean, there's the whole idea of telling stories,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just kind of being creative, which I know a lot of people just kind of put that as a secondary item.
Well, it definitely, for me personally, I think me getting into the business of acting, there was definitely a... And keep in mind how I said the business of acting, not acting. Business of acting was, I think ultimately, and coming to New York too, just being like way super ambitious, almost overzealous ambitious. I was more focused on that. And the more I've kind of been more into my art, and I know this is a story you hear all the time, but the more I'm just more into just developing myself as an artist and not worrying about money and, you know, am I going to work and all that sort of stuff, has at least been comforting for me. Like, you know, I'm 40, I'll be 41 on next week, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, happy birthday, dude.
Thanks, man.
Any plans?
I'm going home. I'm going to Cali next...
What's it like going home for you?
What's it like? It's, well, I only see my folks once a year. And,
For your birthday?
Well, this is actually the first time I'm going to go to... this is the first time I'm actually going to go home for my birthday. I usually go for Christmas or Thanksgiving, right. usually on the holidays. So this is the first time I'm going to go home on my birthday, because I didn't go for Christmas. And so that I'm going to get hit birthday. I'm going to hit birthday, and then Mother's Day is the week following. So.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, for me, I mean, it's always... You know, I grew up in a very working class family, very blue collar. So the idea of me being an artist was never really, it was just foreign. It was like I wanted, hey, I want to go. I'm gonna go into this rocket ship, and we're gonna go live on Mars. Okay. It was kind of like that same thing. So whenever I go home, it's always this ambiguity of, you know, is Van okay? Is he doing okay? Is he happy?
Wait, your parents? You think your parents are asking that question, or asking yourself that question?
No, yeah. it's more my parents. It's this uncertainty because it's like I chose to be a deep sea diver and they've never been in the ocean, so it's like, well, I hope he's doing okay. I mean, to this day, my mom, whenever I talk to my mom, she'll ask like, "Hey, did you work today?" And it could be like Sunday or what, you know, or.
Right.
It's like, you know, she comes from this mentality of, you know, earn your keep, you know, work every day. And I'm really fucking lazy. Right. And obviously, if I don't have to work, I won't work. Like most people, I don't really think that's a bad thing. But my point is, so when I go home, it's this, I wish I could bring them to a point of like understanding of my happiness is not predicated on wealth.
Oh, that's how they feel.
Well, they just want, you know, like, I think most parents, they want their child to be happy.
Right.
So how do you become happy? In terms of, well, if you're struggling, then you're not happy. You can't be happy.
Right.
You know, if you live a pauper's life, then you can't be happy. If you have nice things and you are taken care of, you can pay bills, then yeah, you should, then you know, at least you don't have that worry.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always there've always been this disconnect that I wish I could bridge a little. And I always to my regret, I always say like, you know, this vid's going to be a little different, and it never, I mean, shame on me, it just never kind of, it really just kind of dissolves to, you know, everybody's happy in the room, and I'll take that as a victory. But your parents were pretty supportive of you being out here and being an actor.
Yeah, I would say yeah, they were. I would say they were. I think, if anything, I think they're glad that I'm just trying to pursue anything. Because, I mean, you know, I was definitely the son that probably took the most years off their life.
What does that mean?
Well, I had behavioral problems in school, so
the tuba didn't help.
Oh, I think it did. Oh. I think that's why they were like, yeah, okay, he's focused on something.
What do you mean behavior problems? Like you were like bringing switchblades to school?
No, not that bad. I wasn't that bad. But I was like I went to the principal a lot when I was a kid. I got in, I used to actually be a bully.
Wow.
Yeah. And real young though. I was you know, I just found myself picking on the worst kid, you know.
One kid?
There was always that one that, you know.
Oh, just, you would alternate. You would be like, okay, he's a little fat. I'm just going to, like, fuck with him. Or...
Yeah, but it wasn't, like, premeditated, though. That's the weird thing. I think, not that bullying is good or anything. It's just kids being kids. I mean, you really don't realize what you're doing. You think what you're doing is right.
Were you with a group? Or no, you were just kind of like a...
Well, God, makes me sound like I'm a future murderer or something.
No, okay, I should qualify that, because this is actually, this came up actually pretty recently on another mm-hmm. guest. Mm. The idea of bullies, like in my adult life, I don't I don't know anybody who's like, yeah, you know, I used to be this, you know, I used to be a chronic bully. More than anything, I mean, you know, since we're kind of in the same world, a lot of artists were bullies as a younger person.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, like, are those chronic bullies? What happens to them? Like, do they reform? Do they reform like you, Josh? Or do they become like congressmen and highway patrol officers?
Yeah, well, I've seen that story tons of times, you know? Just people who couldn't express themselves in maybe normal situations, and they needed a vehicle to do it in. And when they finally do it, when they do find that vehicle, it kind of sets a standard for the rest of your living, you know?
I don't want to dwell on the negative too much, but what would you do? Like, how would you bully him?
Oh, God.
Because I'm trying to get, I'm more curious about you when you said you had behavioral problems. So yeah. I'm just wondering, like, how is that correlating to the other?
Well, see, the behavioral problems were a result of not being able to learn as fast as the other kids. I was a slow learner. So while kids were excelling, I was kind of being left behind. So I guess instinctively, I guess you feel that as a kid. You know, everyone's getting better and you're still down here taking these remedial classes, and I didn't realize that at the time, but you just, and so I think maybe in some weird way you lash out, and so this, it was when I was youngest, when I was like 6 or 7, there was one kid, and me and this other kid used to gang up on this kid, and we used to just basically throw things, like little, it was horrible, but I'd throw little, like these little tree seed things, we used to just... it was bad.
Kid grew up to be Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple.
Probably. He probably is somewhere. And then in second grade, I had to go to the principal a lot because I was just a disruptive kid in class. That transferred, I think, by third grade, by about 8 years old, that started translating, luckily, into being more the class clown. Being more the person that doesn't mind being laughed at. Because I would do things, and then...
But did you guys move around a lot?
No.
So isn't that hard to reinvent yourself if you're in the same neighborhood with the same group of kids?
You know, I think... And it's really cool because next week I'm actually going to go visit one of my childhood best friends.
You know, look for the little kid to bully him again? He's probably like 6'8" now.
Yeah, I know. Who knows? I've always wondered what happened to that kid. I ask every once in a while. No one really knows, but... I forgot the question.
Oh, you were going back. Oh, before that, you were talking about you were going to go back home and see a good friend.
All right.
But before that, we were talking about linking the behavioral items.
Right. Oh man. Yeah, I went off on a. So. Yeah. So I think it was a reaction to that, not being able to. You know, and because I couldn't read, my reading skills were very slow, and so my parents helped me with reading, with like words and stuff like that, and then to kind of catch up with the other kids. But yeah, I think, but it's funny how, you know, all that stuff, and it created anger, I think, in me too. I think you have these anger, you start getting really upset that you're not like the other kids. I definitely felt somehow, less, there was always a feeling in my life that I was less than the average, like not as good as. I kind of grew up with that feeling, and I think what happens when you kind of grow up with that, I think you feel like you want to overcompensate in a way. You know, another reason for going into acting or you know, having these, going after a huge dream, you know, you're probably overcompensating in some way.
Oh, sure. Whenever, anytime you feel insecure, lashing out, like, in acts of rage or violence are like a shortcut to our idealized form of control.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really have control. But if we get angry or we smash things or we get violent, we can seize control, at least in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I had similar tribulations growing up as well, and it's interesting how I reacted a little differently. I currently have dyslexia, but it wasn't diagnosed until very late. So I remember in elementary school, you know how you have two classrooms, and then it's called like a team, mm-hmm. and then you kind of switch, like one teacher will only teach English, but you're kind of like going back and forth with the two classrooms. We had to do a test where you tell time, so there are these clocks,
okay.
and you just tell time, and that's like my kryptonite. I just couldn't do it, and I remember.
Interesting.
You said if you pass, all the people that pass will go into one classroom and watch The Hound of Baskervilles, the Sherlock Holmes, but it was a cartoon.
Right.
And if you didn't pass, you'll be put into the other room. So, and that's one of my favorite Sherlock Holmes stories. And I just saw all these kids going in there, you know, lining up. They had a little popcorn for these kids. And I was just like, fuck them. And I got into this other room. It was me and like seven black kids. And they're like, man, what the fuck are you doing here? I'm like, I don't know. And then,
damn.
It's weird because at that time, this was like second grade, but at the time they were like, man, fuck it. I don't, you know, they just felt hopeless. But they're like, man, we wish we were over there, but fuck it. And I felt so insecure because I wanted to be over there, but I didn't want anybody to know that I was with, you know, essentially the dumb kids.
Right.
But yeah, and I carried that learning disability. I didn't know what. I just thought it was stupid, and I carried that with me for so many years.
I'm going to ask you what dyslexia is in a second, but the other thing I want to tell you is that I couldn't tell time for a long time.
What's your excuse? I have a medical excuse.
I'm curious to hear what exactly. I know. Tell me what it is. I don't want to.
Well, I forgot for a while because I was a kid.
A standard.
Basically, it's all cognitive. So your brain gives your frontal lobe gives you different gives the rest of your brain different signals.
Okay.
So a lot of times it's numbers. A lot of times it's sentences. Like it took me a long time to read. Like you know you're reading in class and you're like silently reading. And then, like, okay, you know, next 20 minutes, read, like, for the next five pages.
Right,
and I would hear kids, like, move the page. And I'm just like, what the fuck? I'm still in the first paragraph. And I just couldn't figure it out. I'm like, God, I guess I am dumb. But basically, you just need to concentrate. Because the words will get scrambled. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll look like a painting. And then your brain will start to wander as a kid,
yeah.
or even as an adult. It doesn't matter what age you are. You start thinking about other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, I was in a dentist's office I was in high school, and I was waiting. I was reading an article about it was like an interview with Cher, and she said, of all people, and she said that she was dyslexic, and then she like said like how she was diagnosed and all her symptoms. So I was like, this sounds like me. And so then I voluntarily got tested for it. And they were like, yeah, you seems like you have all the symptoms for it. And at the time, in high school, I wasn't college bound. I didn't think I was in remedial classes. And then, I was just like, yeah, fuck this. Oh, well. You know, I mean, because through, you know, since I fucked up that time, that clock test
uh-huh.
to through middle school until now, I was just kind of this is the track that I was on. Everybody... You know, and I kind of knew most of the kids, more or less. I mean, we moved around a lot. But I just figured, like, well, this is my lot in life. You know, and then when I was diagnosed with that, that was like a light bulb for me. And it was just like, oh, okay, well, maybe it's something different than me just kind of being dumb. So, honestly, I did use it. In hindsight, I probably used that as an excuse of, like, not trying that hard. Because it's just kind of like my attitude of just like...
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can't read that. I can't read that well, so. And it's kind of embarrassing, too, right? I mean, when you're like 13 or whatever and you're having difficulty reading.
Well, yeah, man.
I'm just like, man, I don't want to tell anybody.
That's tough, dude.
But But you go different. It sprouts in different ways, right? So I could have easily been very depressed. I could have easily, you know, lashed out on, like, you know, strangle like puppies in the neighborhood or something. But I started getting into like comics because, you know, comics, you have it, there's not much text and there's more, you know, there's more there's more pictures than anything. And that really, you know, started driving my creativity and my storytelling. But yeah, it was a difficult time for me in terms of just like I just thought you know, because it's like something so simple, like why can't I get this?
Yeah.
And everybody's just saying like, well, you really should be able to get this. I'm like, I know.
Yeah,
it's at some point, you just want to be like, just give up and just be like, all right, well, fuck this, man. Because it's easier to be tough and because you're covering mm-hmm. rather than be like, I need some help.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think eventually there's also that moment of just acceptance, you know, of just, it's neither good nor bad. It just is. Just this is what you are, and it's really, I mean, something like dyslexia. I mean, what is that? It could totally mean that you also are completely designed for something that isn't really taught or emphasized in the school system. You know, there's also a lot of flaws within, I think, the school system, the way it's all set up, and how you're supposed to know these subjects are the things that you need to learn, and that's it. You know, there's all that. You know, you always hear stories of people who find their world, and they're like, why haven't I been doing? How come I haven't been in this world this whole time, or whatever?
How did you get diagnosed, or were you?
I've never been diagnosed.
Well, okay. How did you go from that kid you were just talking about to turning the page?
Well, I will say that my mom did take me to a psychologist, a child psychologist. I didn't know who the guy was at the time. She would just drop me off at this dude's house, and we'd play games, and then I guess he would, you know. Anyway.
Was it like in the movies? Did he have like a neck bow tie? And
no, he just seemed like a normal guy. Just.
And you just thought you were just going to hang out with this guy?
I didn't know what was going on. My mom just dropped me off one time with this dude. This is, okay, this is doctor. Or I didn't even see, I think he even said doctor or something. Like, this is so-and-so. You're just going to spend some time with him. You know. And I was like, okay. And it was years later, I think I asked my mom, Mom, who is that guy you took me to?
How come Ralph never comes around the house?
And she said, well, he was a child. Said, I know it. You were freaking sick. What was wrong with me? Well, you know, we didn't know. You had some problems here and there. And we found out it was because you couldn't read very well. And once we got you reading, you know, you got along better with the other kids. I was like, oh, all right.
Do you have how do you manage that with scripts and things like that?
It's still, like, there's still a challenge to read. Like, I don't do it very often because I gotta really, I mean, it's like, first of all, if the book doesn't grab me in like the first couple pages, I'm like, well, this ain't gonna work. scripts. I guess it's different. For some reason, I think, you know, because the actual physicality of what a script looks like, you know, the lines are spaced way far apart, you know, they're not next to each other like that. You got the line and, you know, stage direction. So there's not a lot, if you think about it, on one page of a script compared to a book.
Right.
You know, it's just line. It's just all, it's more.
Most of it's dialogue.
Yeah. Dialogue and instructions or whatever. I don't know. I'm just theorizing here. I've never really like thought about this, but with scripts, I don't know. I read it. I think one of my big problems is I not contradict myself, but I sometimes think I'm missing something when I read a script, and I doubt myself that I know everything, what's going on. Like, is there? I'm missing the subtext of what this is all about, or I don't know. I like don't have. Sometimes I want someone else to tell me what's going on here.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're working with a smart director, I mean, that's. I mean, hopefully there's a collaboration and you bring something to the table and that person brings something to the table.
I've gotten better at this. Like now, when I'm working on a script or something with someone, I have hopefully gotten past the I don't care if I look like an idiot asking this question. I gotta ask this question and I will ask it. Because at the end of the day, when you're on stage or whatever, you just, you know, you wanna, if not every question hasn't been answered, I can't perform, you know?
Right, because then an uninformed actor who's out there is just, you're just kind of winging it. And if you're winging it, I don't mean improvising. I mean, you're just throwing shit up there.
Yeah, you're just saying the line or whatever. Yeah, man.
I've had horrible experiences, like, you know, mainly when I first came to New York and I wanted to be in anything, a lot of the black box appearances that I had, you know, black box theaters.
Yeah.
Oh, God, those were awful. They were just...
awful. Your performance or the production was awful? Or both?
The production was definitely awful. I'm going to go ahead and say, like, I was pretty bad, too, only because I was unhappy and and nobody knew what they were doing a lot of times. You know, I think every actor kind of goes through that phase of, like, I'm in a show, but don't come see me. Like, you know, I book something, don't watch it.
I know. I definitely... I know. You want people to know you're in a show.
Yeah.
That's all they want. Just know that I'm in a show. Just know that I'm working. That's it. That's all I want. Don't come see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't come see it, man. Come on. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I like to get over that because... you know, the flip side of that is, for me, I try to remember. That's an ego thing, of course. You know, don't see me because I'm going to be bad. But, you know, it's like your talent. It's a thing that, no matter how bad your performance may be, that's going to affect that one person who sees you. And it's going to ring some weird chord inside of them and make them think about something that, you know, and you too. You may discover something new about yourself.
Well, yeah, I think if those things have at least the potential to be there, then it's worth it.
Right.
I think, you know, if you are just going to the theater uninspired and like, I gotta do this,
mm-hmm.
then hopefully, you know, after you're doing this after a while, you'll know in terms of judgment projects to just not get into. I mean, there's
yeah.
some things that you have to do a leap
you're
of faith.
Right. You're right, yeah.
But then there's other things where you're just like, it just doesn't feel right in my gut.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's it right there. You gotta feel moved.
Yeah. And if it doesn't happen in the beginning, it's not gonna ramp up.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned.
It's like first impressions when you see a girl. And you know where I stand on that. You know. But you see a girl and you know immediately if you wanna pursue something or not, you know? And even the ones you're kinda like, I don't know, you ask a few questions and you're kinda like, you know.
It has to be instinctive.
It's instinctive. And the thing is, I don't know about you, but for me, that it's not just a good script. I could work on a bad script if I know I'm working with a good group of people.
Right, yeah, we're in this together.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
I'm realizing, for me, it's all about the people you get to work with, you know? At least that's what I feed off mostly. You almost don't care anymore if it's a good script or not. You should have some sort of, you know, you don't want to work on just utter trash, but you never will when you
work. But it's organic, right? I mean, you got to go from A to B to go all the way to Z, and it's like this, you know, it's a journey.
Yeah. It's an organic living thing, though, you know, and like do it whenever you can.